All right, so get that you have this incredible garden, right? But then invasive pests, like these bugs, keep coming in and just totally messing up your plants.
Yeah.
So you might want to ban certain plants from coming in to protect yours, right? Well, that's kind of what happened in Maine, but with bait fish instead of plants.
Interesting.
It's a story about states' rights, the environment, and a whole bunch of bait fish. We're going to deep dive into a 1986 Supreme Court case called Maine v. Taylor.
Okay.
It's all about balancing a state's right to protect itself with this idea of free trade across the country. So before we get into the weeds,
Yeah.
let's lay some groundwork.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of the Lacey Act?
The Lacey Act, yeah, it's that federal law that makes it a crime to bring in wildlife if it breaks a state law,
Right,
right?
exactly. So this bait shop owner, Robert Taylor, brought golden shiners into Maine, which was against their state law. Maine was like, "Hold up, you can't do that. Our fisheries are at stake."
Right.
But Taylor argued that Maine's law was basically discriminating against businesses from other states. So boom, we've got a constitutional clash.
Yeah, a classic state versus federal power struggle. All
Exactly.
because of some bait fish.
So tell us more about this bait fish ban. Why was Maine so worried about these little fish?
Well, Maine was really concerned about these bait fish potentially bringing in parasites, or even worse, invasive species that could totally disrupt their natural ecosystem.
Oh, I see.
Think about it. Maine's fisheries are a big deal.
Huge.
Lobster tourism, the whole shebang. They didn't want to risk it all for some out-of-state bait.
That makes sense. But you mentioned this whole thing bumping up against the Constitution.
Yeah.
What's the legal side of this story?
Okay, so this gets into the Commerce Clause.
Ah, yes, the Commerce Clause. Isn't that the part of the Constitution that says states can't mess with interstate trade?
Yep, that's the one. Basically, it says we need to have a somewhat unified national market.
Yeah, like free trade between states.
Maine's law, by specifically targeting out-of-state bait fish, seemed to be violating that principle.
Right, because they were only banning bait fish from other states, not bait fish from within Maine. Exactly. And that's where this idea of the Dormant Commerce Clause comes in. It basically says states can't make laws that put an unfair burden on interstate trade, even if the Constitution doesn't explicitly say it.
So Maine was walking a fine line.
Oh, yeah. They were definitely in a tricky spot.
So how did the Supreme Court deal with this clash between a state trying to protect its environment and this big constitutional principle?
Well, since Maine's law seemed discriminatory right off the bat, the court applied what's called strict scrutiny.
Strict scrutiny. What does that even mean?
It basically means Maine had to prove they had a super good reason for the ban, and that there was no other way to achieve their goal without being discriminatory.
Sounds like a pretty high bar.
It definitely is.
So what did Maine say? How did they defend their law?
Well, they argued that back then the science around parasites and invasive species was still kind of fuzzy.
Ah, so they didn't have all the answers.
Not really. They couldn't be totally sure that inspections or other less restrictive measures would actually protect their fisheries. They felt like they couldn't risk it.
So they were erring on the side of caution.
Exactly. They were like, look, we can't gamble with our entire ecosystem just because the science isn't perfect yet.
So did the court buy it? Did they agree that Maine's environmental concerns were strong enough to justify this ban, even if it seemed discriminatory?
Believe it or not, they did.
Wow, really?
The Supreme Court actually sided with Maine.
So they said it was okay for Maine to restrict interstate trade in this case to protect their environment.
Yeah, it was a 6-3 decision. The court recognized that Maine didn't have to have all the answers before taking action.
That's pretty interesting. So this decision essentially gave states some leeway to act as, what do you call it, ecological custodians.
Yeah, ecological custodians, even if it means impacting interstate commerce a little bit.
So Maine won, but you mentioned this wasn't a unanimous decision.
Oh, yeah, not everyone on the court was happy about this.
So who disagreed and why? What were their concerns?
That was Justice Stevens. He was worried that this decision could open up a can of worms. He thought it might give states an excuse to hide protectionist measures behind environmental concerns.
So basically using environmental reasons as a cover to protect local businesses from competition.
Exactly. He was worried about states abusing this power and undermining the whole idea of free trade.
That's a valid concern. It seems like it could be a slippery slope.
Right. And that's a question that still comes up today. Where do we draw the line between legitimate environmental protection and sneaky economic agendas?
That's a tough one. It seems like there's a lot of gray area there.
A lot of gray area, indeed.
So we've got this decision that seems to give states more power, but also this warning from Justice Stevens to watch out for potential abuse. Where do we go from here? What's the takeaway from all this?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is that evidence matters a lot.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're dealing with something as complex as the environment and the economy.
If a state wants to justify a law that seems discriminatory, they need to have a rock-solid case. They need to show they've considered all the options and that this is the only way to protect their interests.
So strong evidence is key. What else stands out to you from this case?
Oh, there's also this interesting little jurisdictional twist.
A jurisdictional twist. Tell me more.
So remember how Taylor was initially charged under the Lacey Act?
That federal law we talked about?
Yeah. Well, Taylor actually tried to argue that Maine couldn't even appeal the decision in federal court.
Wait, why would he say that?
His argument was basically, hey, this is a federal case now. Maine doesn't have the right to butt in.
So he was trying to use a legal technicality to get out of trouble.
You got it. But the Supreme Court wasn't having any of that.
I bet they weren't.
They quickly shut down his argument. They pointed to a law that specifically allows states to defend their own laws, even in federal court.
So even though the charges were federal, Maine still had a right to be involved.
Exactly. It's a reminder that states can be real players in shaping federal law, especially when it comes to defending their own policies.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But let's circle back to the core issue here, this balance between state power, environmental protection, and free trade.
Yeah.
It feels like Maine v. Taylor really set the stage for a lot of the legal battles we're still seeing today.
Oh, absolutely. It's a case that keeps coming up in law schools, courtrooms, all over the place. It really kicked off a whole conversation about how to balance these competing interests.
And how to make sure states are using their power responsibly.
Exactly.
Well, this is already super fascinating, and we haven't even scratched the surface of the science involved in this case.
Oh, yeah. The science is where it gets even more interesting.
Well, hold that thought, because we're going to dive deeper into the scientific side of this case.
Okay.
And explore what it all means for the average person when we come back after a short break. So you were saying something before the break about the science involved in the case.
Oh, yeah. The science is where things get really interesting in Maine. Taylor Maine was basically saying, look, we know the science about these parasites and invasive species isn't totally clear yet, but that's exactly why we need this ban.
So they were arguing from a lack of certainty.
Exactly. They were relying on this idea called the precautionary principle.
The precautionary principle. What's that?
It's this idea that when you're dealing with potential environmental threats, it's better to be safe than sorry, even if the science isn't totally settled.
So like err on the side of caution.
Exactly. Maine was saying, we can't afford to wait until we have all the answers, because by then it might be too late.
That makes sense. But couldn't that principle be used to justify all sorts of restrictions on trade?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Where do you draw the line?
Right. If a state can just ban anything from another state by saying, well, we're not sure if it's safe, so better safe than sorry, that could really disrupt the whole national economy.
Oh, absolutely. The court recognized that. They said states can't just ban whatever they want under the guise of environmental concern. There has to be a real balance.
So how did the court strike that balance in this case? What made Maine's argument so convincing?
Well, Maine did a good job of presenting evidence that the risks from these out-of-state bait fish were unique.
Like specific to Maine's ecosystem.
Right. They argued that the ecological differences between Maine's waters and those of other states made it really hard to predict how these non-native species would behave.
So even a small number of invasive species could potentially cause a lot of damage.
Exactly. And they emphasized that there really weren't any good alternatives.
Like inspections wouldn't be enough.
They argued that inspections wouldn't be reliable enough given the uncertainty about these species. They just couldn't risk it.
So the court agreed that Maine's ban was specifically designed to address this really specific environmental threat. But what about Justice Stevens? He wasn't convinced, right?
Nope. Justice Stevens was still worried.
What would it have taken to bring him on board?
Well, I think he would have liked to see Maine try a little harder to cooperate with other states, maybe explore some regional solutions.
So more collaboration, less going it alone.
Exactly. He might have also been swayed if there had been more clear-cut scientific evidence about the risks of these golden shiners specifically.
So more targeted research focused on Maine's fisheries.
Right. He was concerned that the science wasn't quite strong enough to justify such a sweeping ban.
So he was basically raising a red flag about states potentially overreaching in the name of environmental protection.
Yeah, he was worried about setting a precedent that could be abused by other states.
Like using environmental reasons as an excuse to protect local businesses or something.
Exactly. And I think his concerns were valid. The dormant Commerce Clause is there for a reason. It's supposed to prevent states from creating unnecessary barriers to trade.
Right, we need a unified national market. But we also want states to be able to protect their own environments.
It's a constant balancing act. And Maine v. Taylor really highlights that tension.
It definitely does.
Yeah.
So what are some of the broader implications of this case? How did it affect environmental regulations going forward?
Well, Maine v. Taylor basically set a framework for states to justify regulations that impact interstate commerce for environmental reasons.
So it created a kind of roadmap.
Yeah, a roadmap with some pretty specific guidelines. The court said states can restrict the flow of goods across their borders, but they have to be able to show a few things.
Like what?
First, they have to show that there's a legitimate local purpose for the regulation, like protecting public health or the environment.
Okay, makes sense.
Second, they have to demonstrate that there are no less discriminatory alternatives, so that they can't just ban something outright if there are other ways to achieve the same goal.
And third,
they have to back up their claims with solid evidence.
So it's not enough to just say, we think this is bad.
Nope. They need hard data scientific studies, risk assessments, things like that.
So Maine v. Taylor essentially gave states some power to act as environmental stewards, but they have to be able to justify their actions.
Exactly. And this case has been cited in tons of legal challenges to state environmental regulations since then. It's become a real touchstone in this area of law.
So it had a pretty significant impact on the legal landscape. Can you give us some examples of other state regulations that have been challenged under the Commerce Clause since Maine v. Taylor?
Oh, sure. There have been cases involving state laws that restrict things like waste imports, bans on certain agricultural products, even regulations on how goods are labeled.
Wow. So it really runs the gamut.
Yeah. The Commerce Clause comes up in all sorts of environmental cases. There have been challenges to state renewable energy policies, restrictions on genetically modified organisms, even laws about selling fireworks.
Fireworks, really?
Yep. It all comes down to whether the state's regulation is placing an undue burden on interstate commerce.
So what are some of the key takeaways from these cases? What have we learned about how the courts apply the Commerce Clause in these situations?
Well, one big takeaway is that the courts generally try to give states the benefit of the doubt when it comes to protecting things like public health and the environment.
So they're not eager to strike down state regulations.
Not unless they're clearly overstepping their bounds. But states still have to be able to justify their actions.
They can't just do whatever they want.
Right. And the courts have developed a bunch of tests and factors to determine whether a state regulation is actually constitutional.
So there's a whole legal framework for analyzing these cases.
Exactly. And it's pretty complex. But some of the key things they look at are whether the regulation discriminates against out-of-state businesses, whether it actually serves a legitimate local purpose, and whether the burdens on interstate commerce are way bigger than the local benefits.
So it's all about finding that balance again.
Exactly. Balancing state power, environmental protection, and free trade. This constant juggling act.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to a state that's thinking about enacting a new environmental regulation that might affect interstate trade?
Well, the first thing I'd say is get a good lawyer.
Good legal advice is always a good idea.
Especially in this area of law, they need to make sure the regulation is written in a way that minimizes the risk of getting sued.
So it's all about careful drafting.
Yeah, and they should do their homework. Gather strong scientific evidence to support the need for the regulation, show that there aren't any less discriminatory alternatives, and maybe even talk to other states about potential regional solutions.
So collaboration is key.
It can definitely help strengthen their case.
So this has been super helpful. We've talked about the baitfish ban, the dormant commerce clause, strict scrutiny.
Yeah.
Justice Stevens's dissent, even some practical tips for states.
There's a lot to cover.
But there's one more thing I want to touch on. You mentioned earlier that the science wasn't totally settled in Maine v. Taylor. So how do courts typically handle cases where the science is evolving or contested?
That's a tough one. Courts aren't scientists, after all. They don't always have the expertise to sort through complex scientific debates.
So what do they do?
Well, they usually rely on expert testimony, scientific reports, risk assessments, things like that. They try to find the best available evidence and make a judgment call based on that.
So it's not always about having all the answers. It's about making the best decision with the information you have.
Exactly. And the standard of proof in these cases isn't absolute certainty. It's usually something called a preponderance of the evidence.
Which basically means it's more likely than not that the state's regulation is justified.
Right. So you don't need to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're right, just that the evidence leans in your favor.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But what about when the science is really contested? Like when there are experts on both sides of an issue.
That's when it gets really tricky. In those cases, courts might look for a scientific consensus, or at least a majority view among the experts.
So it's like, is there a general agreement in the scientific community?
Right. And they'll also consider the potential consequences of getting it wrong.
So, like, what's the worst that could happen if they allow the activity versus what's the worst that could happen if they ban it?
Exactly. It's all about weighing the risks and benefits. And that brings us back to this core idea of balancing competing interests.
Which seems to be the theme of our conversation today.
Definitely. In environmental law, you're always trying to find that sweet spot between economic activity, public health, and ecological protection.
And the courts play a crucial role in making sure that balance is struck fairly and constitutionally.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I think we've covered just about every angle of Maine v. Taylor. The facts, the legal reasoning, the dissenting opinions, even the broader implications for environmental law.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made me realize just how complex and nuanced this whole area of law is. I feel like I could teach a law school class on this now.
You've certainly absorbed a lot of information. Hopefully our listeners have too.
I think they have. It's been a truly enlightening deep dive. But before we wrap up, I have one final thought-provoking question to leave our listeners with.
Oh, I love a good thought-provoking question. Hit me with it.
We've talked a lot about how Maine's bait fish ban was upheld because of the potential environmental risks. But what about when the risks aren't to the environment, but to human health?
That's an interesting twist.
Like, what if a state wanted to ban certain foods or products from other states because they believe those things pose a health risk to their citizens?
Well, that's where things get even trickier.
Because now we're not just talking about the Commerce Clause, we're also talking about a state's power to protect public health and safety.
Exactly. And that raises a whole new set of legal questions.
So we were talking about public health and how that plays into a state's right to regulate stuff coming in from other states.
Right. Like, what if a state thinks something's dangerous to its people? Can they just ban it, even if it messes with interstate commerce?
Exactly. Like, it seems kind of tricky, right? States obviously have this power to protect their citizens.
Yeah, for sure.
But how does that work with the Commerce Clause? Doesn't that prioritize a free and open national market?
Yeah, it does. It's all about finding that balance like we've been talking about.
Right, so it can't just be a free-for-all.
No, the courts have always said that states have a legitimate interest in protecting public health, even if it affects interstate trade to some extent.
Okay, so there's some wiggle room.
But it's not a blank check.
So what happens when a state tries to regulate something for public health reasons? How much scrutiny does that kind of regulation face?
Well, the court usually uses what's called a balancing test.
Balancing test.
Yeah, they weigh the state's interest in protecting its people against the potential burden on interstate commerce.
So, like, is the state's interest more important than the impact on trade?
Right. They look at a bunch of factors, like how serious is the health risk? Is the regulation really necessary to address that risk? Are there less restrictive ways to achieve the same goal? And is the state really trying to protect its citizens, or are they just trying to protect local businesses from competition?
So it's not just about whether something is harmful. It's also about the state's motives.
Exactly. The court wants to make sure that states aren't abusing their power.
Makes sense. Can you give us some examples of public health regulations that have run into trouble with the Commerce Clause?
Oh, yeah. There have been plenty. There was this case back in the 70s where a state tried to ban the sale of milk from cows that had been treated with certain hormones.
Hormones in milk. That sounds a little scary.
Yeah. The state claimed it was a public health risk, but the court wasn't convinced.
Really? Why not?
Well, for one thing, there wasn't enough scientific evidence to back up their claim.
So they didn't have a strong enough case.
Right. And it also looked like they were trying to protect their own dairy farmers from out-of-state competition.
So like a hidden agenda.
Exactly. The court saw right through it.
That reminds me of Justice Stevens' concerns in Maine v. Taylor.
Yeah.
He was worried about states using environmental reasons as a cover for protectionism.
Yeah, it's the same principle. States can't just hide behind these lofty goals. They have to be acting in good faith.
So transparency is key.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that these cases aren't just about abstract legal principles. They affect real people.
Right. We're talking about people's health and livelihoods.
Exactly. A state's ability to regulate public health can have huge consequences for its citizens.
So it's a really important power, but one that needs to be used responsibly.
Definitely. It's a big responsibility.
So what have we learned from all this?
Mm-hmm.
How can states strike that balance between protecting their citizens and not overstepping their bounds when it comes to interstate commerce?
Well, I think the key is to be thoughtful and deliberate.
not just knee-jerk reactions.
Right. They need to really consider the scientific evidence, weigh the costs and benefits, and explore all the options before they enact regulations that could affect interstate trade.
So it's about being careful and responsible.
Yeah, and it's also about being transparent and accountable to their citizens.
Makes sense. And I think it's important for citizens to be engaged in these debates, too.
Yeah.
We need to understand the issues and hold our elected officials accountable.
Couldn't agree more. An informed citizenry is crucial for a healthy democracy.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've explored the complexities of the Commerce Clause, state power, environmental protection, public health.
You've gone deep.
We have. And it's been fascinating to see how a case about some bait fish can raise such profound legal questions.
Maine v. Taylor really is a landmark case.
It is. And it shows how important it is to find that balance between competing interests in our legal system.
A balance between state and federal power, between environmental protection and economic growth, between individual rights and the common good.
It's a constant balancing act. But I think that's what makes our system so dynamic and resilient.
I agree. It's always evolving, always adapting to new challenges.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of law and policy.